Hello and welcome back to the Farm Market Cafe podcast. For those of you that have listened before, this first little bit's going to be a review. For new listeners, thanks for tuning in. And I want to tell you a little bit about the Farm Market Cafe. It's a restaurant located in Onamia, Minnesota, right off of Highway 169 that is serving up delicious food made from local ingredients sourced from as close to the restaurant as possible. In previous episodes, I've sat down and had a conversation with the owners and kind of got their outlook on things and their story about the Farm Market Cafe, and I think we learned quite a bit from that. Now, in the interview here today, I sat down with all three of them at once to kind of get the whole story of the Farm Market Cafe and how it came into being. So we are going to go ahead and jump into that interview in just a few moments here. We're sitting down today with three people that you already know, and you know their roles from previous episodes. This afternoon, I'm sitting down with Barb the farmer, Pat the chef, and Mary the roaster. Obviously, I'm simplifying their tasks, but we're hoping to kind of expand on that a little bit more. I want to welcome them, all three of them, back to the Farm Market Cafe podcast. How are you guys doing today?
Hey, Bjorn. Good. I'm good. Thank you.
This is kind of an amazing story, the whole idea, the whole concept of the Farm Market Cafe. Prior to opening the Farm Market Cafe, how did you know each other?
I think that we have come to know each other mostly through the farmer's market. When the farmer's market began about 6 or 7 years ago, and we were all vendors at the market, I think that's how we got to know each other better anyway.
Okay. Anybody have anything to add to that?
And I think just knowing each other through the community, we didn't have maybe daily contact, but I always knew that, oh yeah, Barb Eller, she's down the school road. She has that farm where those pigs are running around in the woods. You know, why would somebody have pigs running around in the woods? And Pat, I always knew her through just being in the community doing various church projects, because that's where we met, working together with our kids at the church and then having our children in school together. So we basically had something that we knew about each other, but never really like would go out to supper and sit there and chew on ideas.
Well, I suppose just of the nature of Onamia being a smaller town, everybody kind of knows each other in some capacity.
But it wasn't until years later that I realized that Lena Segrin is Pat's grandmother. And of course, Lena was good friends with my folks too. So it's kind of a small community, but that was a surprise to me.
Sure. How did the concept of the Farm Market Cafe come up? Kind of walk me through the discussion that took place, and whoever wants to jump in here can go ahead.
Well, it was a long, drawn-out process. I'll begin with that. Actually, it started with the farmers market in 2009 when we first opened. We did a survey of our producers to see how they wanted the market to grow. One of the items we asked them was whether or not they would be interested in collaborative sales of their agricultural products, and or at the time we had some local crafters too that were involved. We took that one step further and received funding from the Initiative Foundation to do a feasibility study for what kind of a business structure this would look like if we were going to expand our collaborative sales of local agricultural products. Big thanks to the City of Onamia as well as the Initiative Foundation. At the time, we had Onamia Healthy Communities Partnership going on with our Marge Agnew as the president. And she provided a lot of support and impetus. I'm not sure that's the right word. To get rolling. So in February of 2010, we got together a steering committee, and the steering committee list looks like the who's who of foodies in the Mille Lacs Lake area. We called ourselves the Mille Lacs Area Food Network. And to make a long story short, we learned a lot about local food systems within a short period of time. We were supported by the Green Corps, which is funded by the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, with Emily Mayer, who provided the staff work so that we could get our feasibility done by I think it was, well, we got it done in May of 2011. So all this started back in February of 2010. It took us that long to get the study done. And by golly, then, when Pat and Mary were both interested, and Deb was very interested as well, we had some other folks that were interested in being members of the limited liability company, which is the business structure we chose. We opened in June 21st, 2011, like a month and a half after we finished the feasibility study. We were rolling.
Well, and that kind of answered the next question I had, that was, what was the time frame from idea to concept? But I think you touched on that pretty good. So we're going to go ahead and jump right into the next one. Where does the food come from, and how much of it is produced locally? Like, what percentage?
Pat, you can answer that.
Well, we try to source from a 50-mile radius around the cafe area. And I would say what I tell people is 80% of what we use. I haven't really broken down the numbers to see how accurate that is. But I would say from the amount that comes in from our local producers and the amount that comes in outside of that, I think that's pretty close. And when we can't get within that 50-mile radius, we try to do Minnesota grown, as local as possible.
Yeah, and you know, the favorite story of mine is, you know, Julius Lovis is one of our members, and he was very creative in terms of the equity he put in. I think it was part of a side of a beef that ended up being his member equity when we first started, but he's an Organic Valley dairyman. So we carry Organic Valley dairy products, but son of a gun, if his milk has to go to Wisconsin to be processed, and then it has to be shipped back to Minneapolis, or Duluth now in that case, and then it comes back to us when he farms just about 6 miles down the road. So how far does that food have to go? That's just a little example of our centralized food system and how it works.
Now, some statistics say, and I've heard this, that 9 out of 10 restaurants fail in their first year. How'd y'all make it work that first year?
Gosh, we worked hard.
we worked really hard.
Yep. There was 4 of us really committed, and every last one of us did everything from scrubbing the floors to painting stuff to getting tables from goodness knows where. It was a lot of work. And Mary was very creative with her member equity, too. We got coffee beans for member equity that first year.
I think the first 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And a coffee grinder.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm.
And the elbow grease.
You're
just
right.
just like the rest of you.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. We worked hard.
So needless to say, it was not an easy task. What's the most surprising thing you've learned over the past 3 years or so?
I don't know if I should say this or not. amongst other things, I was surprised to learn how very, very narrow the profit margin is in any kind of restaurant business. I mean, you hear stories about people finding ways to conserve on trash bags. Well, it's true. You do need to do things to that level of detail in order to even break even. That was the most surprising thing to me. And then the other thing was that was a surprise to me. I don't know why it would be, but Whole Foods processing, the labor required by that is extremely high. I grew up, you know, eating Whole Foods and processing them quickly for my own family's use. In a restaurant setting, that really narrows that profit margin because we don't get stuff that's processed, canned, packaged right off the truck. Pat is very clever in terms of using Whole Foods to make extremely good meals.
Thank you.
So overall, just more labor intensive.
Yeah, those two things really surprised me.
Sure. Anybody else have anything they want to add in there?
I've been cooking from scratch for a long time. And I remember I would go to another restaurant where they would advertise homemade soup and be disappointed in the taste of that, realizing I was looking for from scratch and not just homemade, and the difference there. And I would wonder, why don't more people do it this way? Why don't more people make from scratch? And I know. I mean, at home when you do it, it's cost effective. You save money. But in the restaurant industry, because of the extra work involved, the extra labor that you're paying for, it's not. It's much more expensive. So I know why restaurants don't do it that way. And yet we're committed to trying to figure out how can we do it that way, because we believe that that's the best thing for us and that's what tastes the best.
Well, and it certainly does show through in the quality of the ingredients that you, or the quality of the product, rather, that you put out there. So hopefully that's a little reward in itself.
The other thing that I've learned is the surprisingly wonderful flavor of fresh roasted coffee. I knew Mary somehow before I knew that she roasted coffee. That was a carefully kept secret. But that coffee is wonderful.
Well, thank you.
Oh, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, because of Mary, I am now an official coffee snob.
Well, it's easy to get to that point when you're having her coffee. Hypothetical question here. If someone came in and gave you $1 million to improve the business, what are some things you'd do?
I want a bigger kitchen. Say that right off the bat. A facility that better meets the needs that we have.
Yep. And that we could put it out there so that one of our ideas is to have a certified kitchen so that if I wanted to go in and make salsa to sell to other places, I would have a kitchen to do that. Or if I somehow figured out how I wanted to make chocolate-covered coffee beans and be able to process them there, you have to process in a certified kitchen. And so we would have the ability to rent out the space, so to speak, so that we would get some income. We could use some of the products that people are making. And one of my friends down in the cities who does homemade caramels, Sweet Jules, she's been on Martha Stewart's America Made products. So to get all of that out there and to get your name out there would be pretty exciting to be able to be a part of that. I also would change up some of the venting of where we're at because of the situation where we're in the middle there of two businesses. It would be just nice to be able to put the noise and everything away, and then to have some ceiling fans to take care of the heating to help us with our bills. That's one of the biggest things. It's such a high building. I would do something more with the heating and air conditioning part of the place.
Sure.
Well, maybe I was thinking echelons above reality. But I said, if I had $1 million, I would expand our value-added chain. I mean, all the way up to a local creamery, a local feed store, and then really jumpstart some of our cattlemen in terms of doing grass-fed animals, beef. We've got a long ways to grow with our farming community in terms of them taking advantage of this market outlet that we call the Farm Market Cafe. We're in the very beginnings of that. The other thing I would do with $1 million is I would start a fund. You know, I wouldn't use the whole million in any one place. Of course, Pat would get her bigger kitchen. You could have your community kitchen. That'd be just fine. But then we could also start a fund for beginning farmers. You know, the trend nowadays is for these young, I don't want to call them hippies, that dates me, but young people in their 20s to 30s, abandoning maybe the high-tech, fast-paced world of the city that they've been caught up into and wanting to come back and grow their own food and raise a family on a farm that provides the values that they want their children to learn. So I would start a fund then for these beginning farmers that need all the help they can, I tell you. They come inexperienced out of the city, and within their first year, they think they're failures, when in reality it takes 20 to 30 years to really understand and begin to farm the land in a sustainable way. And definitely we would need a bigger space.
Well, and the other thing that would be really great would be able to to use that idea of expanding not only your cattlemen, but maybe we could also jumpstart hide tunnels and greenhouses and farmers, because we need the plant product as much as we need the meat product. So we would be able to do some different kinds of gardening, so to speak, to keep us year-round in much more fresher produce than just having to make sure that we're processing everything so that we have it for the winter and the fall.
I totally agree. The University of Minnesota is doing some wonderful research now on winter production of greens. And the high tunnel technology is a step in the right direction for season extension. The next step beyond that is winter gardening in greenhouses and the ability to grow all them fresh produce during the wintertime is absolutely exciting to me. I get real excited about that.
And you might not even need a building or a high tunnel. You could do hydroponic with lights, and you could do a whole different. That. So that would be another way to go.
Aquaponics, and then we could add fish to the menu.
Well, those are all pretty good ideas. And if there's any wealthy benefactors listening to this show, you can make your checks out to Farm Market Cafe. You know, and this question kind of follows up on that last one, but let's take the $1 million out of the equation. What's the future of the Farm Market Cafe? Where would you like to see it go in the next, let's just say, year or two?
Because of recent grant money that we were given, we're able to move forward a little bit towards our vision of being able to expand our ability to have more local food grocery available at the cafe. So that's been a part of the vision, too, not to the cafe entity is kind of a means to an end. Is that the right way to say that? To be able to utilize the local produce, but also to be able to have it available for everybody on any income level to be able to purchase. And so that's a shorter term, like within the next couple of years, I can see some of that becoming more of a reality. And I think right now that's really what we're working towards, where a lot of our energies are going is how can we do that? And then how can we help anybody who's interested learn about how to use those foods, how to can them or freeze them or how to cook with them, all of those kinds of things.
Yeah, people should watch our Facebook page for the upcoming classes that we've been able to do because of the USDA Farmers Market Promotion Program grant. And that's a part of that. For sure, you know, phase one was the cafe. Phase two is the all-season farmers market or the grocery. Phase three is a ways out there, which was the ability to provide fresh local produce to our other institutions, other restaurants in the area to expand the availability of produce for that. The time frame that we looked at in the feasibility study was a bit more contracted than what we've been able to achieve. Nevertheless, you know, the vision is still there. It's just going to maybe take us a little bit longer to do it, and that's okay because we've learned a lot along the way.
Right.
But going beyond phase three, you know, the vision for us needs to look at how can we make this a successful model so that we can then export it to other local farmers and other local communities across Minnesota. And then from there, from Minnesota, why not nationally? And if we have a successful model nationally, why not globally? Now, this model has the potential to feed the world. I'm not going to mention any big corporate names, but this model of local agriculture is how we're going to feed the expanding population. And it's a great way to do it. Now, that's going to take more than my lifetime, but
everything starts somewhere, right?
Exactly.
Right. Why not Onamia?
Well, you know, I like that last statement so much, I'm going to skip over the last question altogether, because I think the quote that I picked out to wrap this thing up really kind of makes sense, given what Barb just said. And of course, it's a quote from the famous Margaret Mead, and it says, "Never doubt that a small group of thoughtful, committed citizens can change the world. Indeed, it's the only thing that ever has."
I want to thank you three for sitting down today, and we'll be talking again here in the future.
And thank you all for listening. And until next time, be kind to one another. This has been a production of the North Star Network.